documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, along with Vicki Davis, here with you for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy, and today is the 22nd of April, 2017. And it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. Vicki Davis is standing by, and Vicki, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Darren. I'm ready to go. All kinds of interesting stuff to talk about today.
Yeah. Some interesting and some distressing. Subway is closing a bunch of stores. We were talking last week about the business and how the economy is being talked up, and I think this is the first time in Subway's history that they're closing a major amount of stores. 359 locations in 2016, and now the store count dropped 1.3%, according to Bloomberg, to 26,744. Anyway, they're evidently closing down a bunch more. So This is not looking good. That article was dated April 20th of 2017. See, I'm checking the dates better now. Since I had that embarrassing episode last week.
That happens to everybody, you know.
Well,
I've done that myself.
Yeah, you know, Republicans are now we're facing another government shutdown. This is another thing. The budget deal looms. And what are they going to do? It's like rearranging the furniture on the Titanic, because they're not going to control their spending, and they're going to wrangle over these bills for spending. And then I look across the country and I see all the stuff that's happening with the people. You know, the Civil War has already broke out, Vicki. We've got fights now on college campuses with bloodshed. And a lot of this stuff is funded by George Soros, I'm sure.
And a lot of it is funded by our own government, especially the R&D, research and development, science departments, you know, where they're doing what they call innovation. Okay, a lot of that is funded by our government. Of course, what they're innovating is just modern methods of the police state. Mm-hmm. And so, there will be a lot of dissent, because Trump came in and he, at least his messages were targeted towards the people who are working for a living, you know, whereas the science and technology, quote, innovation funding is really the university students and the college professors. So it's kind of like a war between the working world and the academic world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he signed an executive order on April 18th, a presidential executive order on Buy American and Hire American. And said, by the authority invested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, and to ensure the faithful execution of the laws, it is hereby ordered as follows. And he has definitions. In order to promote economic and national security and to stimulate economic growth, create good jobs and decent wages, strengthen our middle class, and support the American manufacturing and defense industrial bases. Of course, he's got to get defense in there. It shall be the policy of the executive branch to maximize, consistent with law, through terms and conditions of federal financial assistance awards and federal procurements, the use of goods, products, and materials produced in the United States. Now, one of the criticisms of this by certain people is how are you going to determine what's made in the United States when you've got increasingly things, products are mixed with foreign parts and U.S. parts, and there's evidently a mix in some. Anyway, you would have to study, you'd have to drill deeper to find out what is actually made in the United States and what isn't, because everything has become so pluralistic anymore and so globalized that it's hard to say what really is Buy American anymore.
Well, yeah, that's true, but that's up to the manufacturers if they want to bid on a contract made in America, and if they're not, they can't bid on the contract. Mm-hmm. And that is a good way to identify what is and is not built in the United States, because all of the information in these supply chains, you know, where these large corporations are have basically distributed their production all over the world, we need to know that. Mm-hmm. Because it is a kind of supply chain warfare.
Right.
And so it's really important that we find out, you know, where things are made, because we can never be self-sufficient if we are dependent on parts that come from communist China or the European Union that's falling apart, or, you know, South America, which has never really liked us much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing that he did that, even though he may have to rescind it on a case-by-case basis, but that will provide the information that we need to know in terms of where things are being manufactured.
Right, and another criticism I see is that this executive order, you know, requiring everyone to hire American and buy American, can stifle his goals for economic, not just economic, but the infrastructure projects that he's trying to get accomplished. It's going to drive up the costs of that. But, you know, I'm okay with that part of it, because honestly, I would rather spend a little more and be able to promote jobs at home than to get all these globalist discounts that we've been getting. Because we see, you know, we just started the show off with, you know, a major restaurant chain. Last week we had a whole list of stores that were closing. And why are they closing? People don't have the available money anymore to just spend like they used
right.
to.
It does not benefit our economy to import foreign labor.
Right.
It's so obvious that
it's obvious unless you're an ideologue.
Well, or you're just a liar who is writing, you know, and has an
agenda.
There is that. An agenda that requires ultimate dishonesty, so that you lie and say that green grass is not green, it's actually purple.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we had a terrorist attack. Paris did anyway. And I'm always suspicious of these things. This one happened on Thursday night. One cop was killed, two more were hurt. France is approaching its first round of voting in the presidential election, and the thought is that this event could affect the outcome of the election. Anyway, here's France 24 with kind of a summary, a real quick summary of what happened.
Paris time.
Let me start that over.
Incident where a car drew up alongside a police vehicle. The driver got out with a gun and shot one police officer, killing him, and wounded two others. A passerby was also wounded in this incident. The assailant was then gunned down by police at the scene. François Hollande has spoken of his deep sadness about what has happened. He has issued a message of security for the French people, saying that you will be protected. And, of course, the the planning and the meetings continue to this to hatch together the response to what now has been claimed as an attack by the Islamic State group, a message issued by their Amaq propaganda arm just a few moments ago to say that they claim the shooting here in Paris.
So another reason to ratchet up the police state. Now, you may recall the massacre that took place, you know, a few years ago, back in 2015, where we talked about this on the show. Francois Hollande was photographed grinning ear to ear at a stadium while something like 120, 130 of his countrymen were dying all around him. He used that incident to impose kind of a martial law type of police state. So, yesterday, here he is at a press conference.
A major security operation is underway.
Wrong one, I'm sorry. It's this one.
Within the framework of the rule of law, but with the confidence and the trust.
Well, man, I tell you what, I'm batting a thousand today. Let me get this at the beginning.
Once again.
All right, here we go.
Once again, here, I would like to renew the commitments that I made for the police officers. Our security is at stake. Everything needs to be done so that police officers, gendarmes, and soldiers can do their job within the framework of the rule of law, but with the confidence and the trust of the whole nation. This is the message that I would like to send tonight. This is a message not only for police officers or the gendarmes, the army. It's a message for everyone. You will be protected.
You will be protected. And from BB... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if the Islamic State is so bold that they just assassinate a police officer and take credit for it, they better throw out their rule of law and declare war and get those people out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we know that who created the Islamic State, you know, and that's the problem. And the deal with France, this is just another commercial for not letting unvetted foreigners in your country. You know, why would they continue to do this? But see, this is, you know, people might think that this is a contrary messaging. But actually, it goes to help implement their plan. Letting unvetted foreigners in your country and then turning around when they commit terrorist attacks, then you turn around and ratchet up the police state. And everybody feels good about it because, oh, well, those officers, those militarized officers are there to protect us. Mm-hmm. So it's the oldest trick in the book.
You know what? With all of these attacks on the developed nations, in view of the environmental agenda, I'm thinking, and this is based on a video that I watched that we'll talk about next week, but I'm thinking that this is intentional. It is warfare on the developed countries to basically reduce them to primitive populations that just reduced electricity, reduced water. It's civilian warfare on the Western developed nations for Agenda 21, for the United Nations environmental agenda.
Mm-hmm.
A managed decline.
Yeah, well, we know that that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
We know that population control is a major component of everything, and which makes me concerned about where we're headed. And I'll get to something that's very alarming that happened just yesterday, as a matter of fact, in that vein. But anyway, one more quick one on this Paris thing. Here's the BBC.
A major security operation is underway in Paris, where a gunman opened fire on a police bus in the heart of the French capital. Reports suggest the gunman was known to the intelligence services. Police have been searching his home in the eastern suburbs of Paris.
He was known to the intelligence services. Isn't that amazing? You know, and...
Probably got his paycheck from him, too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. In fact, several media outlets reported that same thing, and CNN being one of them. I'll put that article in the show notes. But we know that these These operations, in many respects, are often rigged. These operations, and I don't know about this one, could be some lone wolf, lone gunman, but I know that more and more, we just briefly in passing had mentioned the Stockholm, Sweden incident that happened recently. The Stockholm terrorist attack occurred April 7th. It involved, if you remember, a truck being deliberately driven down the crowd of people. It's looking more and more like a staged event at the very least. You know, there's crisis actors that were apparently employed at the scene. There's a great researcher, I think he's based in the UK. He goes by the name of PK. He watching his YouTube channel, he's proven that this group of actors physically carried out a supposedly injured victim, carried them away from the accident scene, I believe south first, then west a few blocks, and then back north for several blocks. All for no apparent reason. I mean, other than it's a photo op for the press. There's no reason to carry injured victims. I mean, you want to keep them stationary as much as possible. I mean, if they're still in a line of fire or something, you'd want to get them out of danger. But the truck had already come to stop. I mean, the truck wasn't moving. Apparently, the threat was neutralized. And they're just carrying this person down the street and around the block for no apparent reason. He used photos that were published in the media to and cross-reference that with the Google Street View to determine the exact location of where these people were and where they ended up. But they were just going around in circles carrying this supposed victim. I mean, it's laughable, Vicky. It's just absolutely laughable.
Well, the global emergency management, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money, and it takes away power from nation states.
And people.
Yeah. So it just happens to be that they hire actors who are not very smart.
Well, I think the problem is they don't realize that the people have gotten smarter. You know, one of the problems with all their little operations is they fail to realize the other side has made a huge mistake, and that is they gave us the tools to blow their cover. We've got all the tools now. I mean, with the Google Street View, that's a huge one, because you can actually, essentially, in a virtual way, you can be there. You can look around and see the surroundings, get the lay of the land. And that is exactly what this guy was doing, this PK, this researcher. You know, he's looking at the photographs, and he's comparing them with the scene, and says, oh, okay, they're here. And he can point to a place on the map where they are. And by just looking at the photographs, and there was one that he had a little trouble with, and he mentioned it in one of his videos, and somebody responded, oh, I'm familiar with the surroundings of that. That's here. And so he looked, looked at where they were talking about and compared it, and sure enough, he says that's where it is. That, you know, you can determine based upon what businesses are in the background. You know, this business is here, and then next to it is this business, and you can look at in the actual street view and see where you are. And he was able to determine that they're just carrying this person around the block. And then there was another scene from the crowd. And that's the other thing, is people who are bystanders, who are standing there, everybody's got their phones now, and everybody's shooting video of everything as it happens. And there was one scene which looked to me like one of the supposedly injured people, she's walking up to the scene. Now, supposedly she's injured, but she walks up to the scene, and then she lays down on the road. I'm not saying nobody died there. I'm not saying that there weren't really injuries. I wasn't there. I can't say that. But I do know that this looks phonier than a $3 bill. Mm-hmm. And for what reason? I can only assume it's to further the whole police state mentality. You know, the other side, they do these things.
One possibility is that they might do that to make it look like a phony terrorist event when it really actually was a terrorist event. But then you have the actors come in after the fact so that the media can, you know, call anybody who says that, well, they can use it as propaganda that it really wasn't a terrorist event when it actually was. So it can go both ways. I can see it both ways. And that's really the difficulty that we have with trying to figure things out, because we have lying mainstream media. You can't trust anybody, really.
Right. Exactly.
Except the people that you know personally. And
right.
You know.
Well, in the meantime, here in Michigan, we had a doctor that was charged. NBC News reports authorities have charged a doctor, along with his wife, with assisting a physician who was arrested in Michigan last week for performing female genital mutilation.
Oh, my God.
Procedures on several young girls. Yeah, this Dr. Fakhruddin Attar, he's a 53-year-old, and his wife, Rita Attar, were arrested on charges of conspiring to perform female genital mutilations on minor girls out at his medical clinic, authorities said Friday. So here we go. The culture of the Middle East being brought here to the United States. Now, this guy was arrested. But if you have people who are in political offices, they're sympathetic to those cultures, how long is it going to be before they are no longer arrested? And this is the problem I have with allowing these unvetted foreigners, and by unvetted, I mean they don't go through the process of applying to be here, the process of forcing them to assimilate to our culture, our values, and our way of life, learn a little bit about our history, learn what we're about, and decide at that point if you want to be a part of it. And if you do, you conform, which means you learn the language, you adopt and adapt. But you don't bring your baggage from your country in. And I look at this as just another symptom of a much larger problem.
Well, you know what the problem is that the global agenda calls for the creation of autonomous zones. Now, I've called them inland ports because they're really defined in law as basically a port, and when they're on an international transportation route, which our interstates are, thanks to George Herbert Walker Bush, they can become, there is a policy that allows them to become an island unto themselves. And just last week, I heard a definition that makes it absolutely clear what they are doing with these zones. They are called self-administrating jurisdictions. Okay. Now, in our law, in Idaho's law, what they did is they created effectively what is a port authority that has the same powers as a city or county or state. They can issue debt. They are an independent jurisdiction. And apparently they can be a self-administrating jurisdiction. You know, once the state passes some laws, which is has to do with absolute property rights, mm-hmm. which they tried to pass here in Idaho. And I forget what the other two are. I'll have to get them. I'm going to write a story about this because it is much easier to explain once you understand this self-administrating jurisdiction on an international highway. It basically becomes a country within a country.
Right.
Under their own set of laws, whatever they decide. And that's how you can have areas where there is Sharia law. You can have sanctuary cities. And I'm sure that that's what they were doing a long time ago. And you remember when the mayor of San Francisco announced that they were going to allow gay marriage? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure, which, you know, shocked the nation because our laws are reciprocal. You know, what is recognized, what is done in one state in terms of marriage is recognized in another state.
Right.
So,
yeah, and they know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
But the point, point is that they are putting these self-administrative jurisdictions all over our country.
Yeah, and that's an interesting term, self-administrating jurisdictions, and it sounds a lot like the Inland Port Network.
It is. That's exactly what I'm trying to say, is that that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Under Admiralty law, maritime law, seaports are self-administrating jurisdictions, and they always have been because of the international nature of the seaport, and because a harbor master had to have the same authority as a ship's captain.
Yep.
And so they've always been self-administrative jurisdictions. Well, in 1921, under international law, they passed the Barcelona Declaration, giving landlocked states the same rights, access to the commercial law for ports as countries that had seaports. So mm-hmm. that created under international law the ability to have an inland port.
Yep, there you go. It's any way that they can undermine our sovereignty. We'll be back here, folks. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. Vicki's website is thetechnocratictyranny.com, where she's got a lot of her research. And her other one is channelingreality.com. And you can also go to TVOI News. That's the Voice of Idaho. All of those are up on the website, our website at governamerica.com. Moving along here, do you have anything you want to discuss before I dive into what happened yesterday?
No, I don't think so. Let's dive.
Well, I was kind of fascinated by the fact that we've had all these power outages. I don't know if you heard about this incident.
Mm-hmm.
There was a series of power outages of events that took place yesterday that, to me, are quite worrying. First of all, there was a massive power outage in San Francisco, and with a report on that, we hear this.
A Fox News alert and a major power outage in one of America's biggest cities, effectively shutting down San Francisco cable car lines and impacting tens of thousands of homes and businesses right now. This outage occurring about 20 minutes ago, we have one BART station, which is like one of the train commuter stations, closed due to the outage, and apparently it's affecting an area of San Francisco that includes the downtown area as well as a large residential area, but not everyone in those areas across the board have lost power. So it's a little bit confusing as to see who's affected, but the early estimates put it at about 90,000 people. So no information from the major electric company as to when the power is going to be back in some of these key areas. As I mentioned, the downtown area being one of the areas affected, but we'll keep you posted as we get more.
Okay, so the actual number was actually 95,000 people. And you can say, well, okay, power outages happen. They blamed it on a substation fire. Fine. But then I find out at the go ahead.
They blamed it on a circuit breaker at a substation.
Yes, a circuit breaker, which I believe caused the fire. I heard it was a substation fire. Anyway, at the same time that's going on in San Francisco, We get this in New York.
Information tonight on the power problem that left some commuters in the dark and others stuck and packed on station platforms. Governor Cuomo tonight calling for an investigation. CBS 2's Alice Gaynor live in Midtown with more. Alice, what a day.
Dana, just another week of a nightmarish commute for so many commuters here in New York City and the tri-state area. Look behind me, the station here at 53rd and 7th closed. We've seen this woman with the MTA giving directions to numerous people, dozens of people all night as they try and make their way home. Trains are bypassing the station here in both directions. Now, Con Ed does have generators parked along the street here, patched into the station, but they are still working to make repairs. Another week, another round of issues for commuters.
Inconvenience.
That's putting it mildly. This morning, some were left in the dark as they sat for hours. Around 7:30, a power outage left this D train stuck in the tunnel at 53rd and 7th with hundreds packed inside. And this E train stopped with one car at the station platform, so at least these riders were able to exit. Platforms were jam-packed with commuters. The outage meant a loss of signals, escalators, communications, and station lighting, and it had a ripple effect throughout the system. At least 11 lines were affected. Temporary generators were brought in to restore signal power, but the initial problem remains. A Con Ed spokesman says one of its electrical lines triggered the outage. We asked him why this happened.
We know that there's some equipment on our side of the street that needs to be repaired. Why it failed, you know, we don't know yet, but we'll find out. We have to get to the bottom of what would cause the equipment failure.
Commuters are fed up.
And MTA is raising fares. So I take the LIR also, almost $300 a month, more than $120, about around $124 the unlimited MetroCard. So commuting is like a rent in itself.
Governor Cuomo also fed up, calling the outage unacceptable, demanding an immediate investigation into all of this. Not only are trains bypassing the station here, but if you're driving, please be aware that 53rd Street between 6th and 7th is also shut down.
Okay, so we have the power outage in San Francisco, power outage in New York. Now, at this point, I'm thinking, there's no way this is coincidental. I could accept one, but not both. But then I find out there were also scattered power outages in Los Angeles as well, all at the same time.
I'll tell you what the coincidence is. Trump's budget cuts the science and technology budgets, you know, university and energy research in particular. The whole climate science thing is, which includes all of the technocratic tyranny that I've been writing about for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is cutting their budget substantially. I don't think he's cutting it enough. I think he ought to just, you know, jettison them like, you know, like a diseased appendage. Mm-hmm. But that's what the coincidence is.
Well, there's that. I know that he called for in his budget $1 trillion for infrastructure spending. And the thought did cross my mind that some of these power companies would love to have a big piece of that pie. But, what worries me here is we've got three massive power outages, and we have a drill coming Monday. This Gotham Shield 2017, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but they're going to simulate a 10 kiloton nuclear detonation over New York on Monday and Tuesday. And, you know, on the eve of this, we're getting massive power outages. Now, this is kind of a strange coincidence.
Who is doing this Gotham Shield? Is that FEMA? Is that a FEMA exercise?
They're probably involved in it, but the agency I got the document from, and I had to really look for this document because I don't know if it's still up on the website, the government website, but this is some kind of nuclear, let me see.
Coincidence with them saying that North Korea wants to do an EMT attack on us, right? though they can't get a rocket off in the air.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and again, we've got the satellites floating around up there. We talked about that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't hear the last half hour of last week's broadcast, go back and listen. Because if you're not aware of this North Korean, this pair of North Korean satellites flying over the United States, and apparently nobody cares about it, apparently nobody is doing anything about it, I think this is something people need to be aware of, and it really is something we should be dealing with. You know, they're observation satellites, we're told. Fine. But let's not let them observe. And if they can observe something, then how long is it going to be before they load payload on a satellite and detonate something over the United States? And then we really do have a problem. While everybody is focused on ICBMs as the, being the delivery method for some nuclear bomb, we've got satellites, and North Korea has demonstrated that it can launch these satellites over our country. And they're flying over there and making, you know, one of them makes several passes a day. So, but three different major cities, three different major outages in the same day. And I guess we're supposed to believe this is all just unrelated.
Yeah, just a coincidence.
Yeah, but this
actually, though, I do have to say something. Mm. When I was working on my smart meter objection, my smart meter complaint with the Idaho Public Utilities Commission, I went through the filings of there is a file of case information with the Public Utilities Commission, and they record everything. And what I found was that the Idaho Power really did not want the smart meters. They were forced to take the smart meters by the Public Utilities Commission. And they were bribed to do so with a big grant from the Energy Department. So I don't know that it's the public utilities that are so much behind all of this, because they've basically lost control of their business through this government regulation and the smart grid technology.
I'm sure that the carrot and stick approach is being employed. Mm-hmm. They're probably promised, hey, look at all the money that you're going to save. And so you'll make a lot of money off of it because of the lack of having to pay people to read meters. And then the other thing is the data, what's going to happen with the data. But
right, plus we can extort your customers because we can control their use of electricity. You know, we'll let you charge time of day pricing and all kinds of stuff. So so there is a financial reward for turning our electric companies, our utility companies, into a weapon against us.
Right. Yeah, you were asking about this Gotham Shield or Gotham Shield. I'm not sure exactly how they pronounce it.
I think it's Gotham.
That's what I was.
New York.
You know, okay. Well, it's not just New York, though. There is a map here. Apparently, Albany, New York is going to be involved. New York City, of course. Brookhaven, New York. But then there's Trenton, New Jersey. Washington, D.C. And you were asking me about the agencies. Certainly, I'm sure FEMA will be involved, but this is really a Department of Energy exercise. They say in the document, overarching consequence management, FRMAC objectives. Now, what is the FRMAC?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Evaluate the ability of deployed Department of Energy elements to appropriately integrate with operational planning and decision-making bodies involving DOD, interagency, and state and local partners. Evaluate the ability of DOE to properly share and interpret modeling results and create data products in the service of informing decision-making processes related to public protection. area of emphasis, gauge the effectiveness of the liaison coordinator in maintaining situational awareness with respect to FRMAC product requests, and ensuring a smooth flow of information from and to liaisons posted in the field response locations. Assess the integration of deployed HQ, CM, and RAP and ROSS personnel at emergency operations centers and other response locations. Evaluate the ability of RAP1 to coordinate. I guess that's probably some kind of rapid response. Anyway, RAP1 to coordinate with New York City, New Jersey, and New York State emergency response organizations. Now, part of this was done last year, apparently, and that was called Northern Lights. So this is the second part of the whole operation. But they say, I guess some of this went on in Minnesota, too. But I'll put this document in the show notes. But there's some people on the internet I saw that were trying to say that this is a hoax. Ladies and gentlemen, these are government documents I have here. They came from government websites. The one thing, you know, even planning minutes from a meeting I've got here from New York, where one of the council people said Gotham Shield 27 will take place in the spring of 2017. It's going to simulate a 10 kiloton IND explosion in New York City and northern New Jersey. Look at sheltering, evacuation, communications, and infrastructure impacts and things of that nature as part of the Department of Defense State of the Century exercise series. So there's also going to be an exercise tying into that somehow up at the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe on the Canadian border of New York State. So I am working with the tribal representative as well as with the federal government to ensure that it's coordinated properly.
Oh, wow. Okay. FRMAC is the Federal Radiological Monitoring and Assessment Center.
Okay.
Okay. And the... It's the public health system is involved, including tribal public health directors. Okay, John Holdren established, he was the director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. He apparently established some kind of indigenous peoples programs. And I really have to take a hard look at that because over the years of my research, I knew there was something going on with the Indian tribes. But if you think about reservations as self-administering jurisdictions, I think they have been using the tribes for some nefarious purpose, and I have to do more investigation on that. But just, you know, my observations over the years, there's something going on there.
Yeah.
So that would account, I mean, at least it would explain partially the involvement of the Mohawk tribes in this exercise.
I just find all this very disturbing, that this, how do we ever get involved? How do we ever deal with, how do we ever survive without all these drills? And it seems like we have these drills going on all the time, and we know that they've had a history of going live. Now, will something happen this week? Probably not. But I just don't see the need for all of this.
I think it's terrorism. I think it is terrorism that is coming from the agencies of our government as they are being directed through the organization that was established by Holdren, also connected with the international, the United Nations. Mm-hmm. This is a war on us. It is a different kind of war. They're not using bullets. They are using terrorism. And they are the terrorists.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And in relation to this whole thing with, you know, again, three different cities, massive power outages in each city, Los Angeles had scattered outages. The LAX airport was apparently very affected by the Los Angeles outage. But massive power outages in three different places just days before this massive drill. I don't think it's a coincidence.
No, certainly not.
And then we have, you discovered some audio from Bill Gertz. And he has this book out called I War, War and Peace. And as I was watching this last night, this is so relevant to what we just talked about here. This, because he's talking about,
it's I War in the Information Age.
Yeah.
War and Peace in the Information Age. Yeah.
He was asked about the cyber threat, because there's some speculation out there that some of these outages might be caused by cyber attacks upon the United States. Now, I have no proof of that at this point in time, but this is what people are, you know, hey, the United States is under attack. Look, there's outages everywhere. And is this a precursor? Is this a test? Is this something that we have coming? I mean, are they rehearsing for the main event? I mean, I'm just throwing this out there, ladies and gentlemen. This is really, really odd that this would be going on right now. And then we're hearing more and more, why are they making the power grid, the electric grid, vulnerable by smarting it up? That's the question everybody should be asking. If cyber is such a huge threat, why are we making ourselves more vulnerable to that threat? The smarter things become, the more security vulnerable they are. And that's just a well-established fact.
The more connected they are.
Yes.
I know that what they did with our transmission grid is that they turned it into a common carrier, and they put it under third-party management so that our utility companies don't even manage their own transmission lines. It was basically what I would call a taking from the utility companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they have established these third-party groups that manage our transmission grid. And so our own Department of Energy and FERC have created this vulnerability with our transmission grid.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, Bill Gertz was asked about the cyber threat, and he brought up the North Korean hacking ability, their ambitions, and their intentions.
Yeah, I do a deep dive on the Sony hack, which took place in 2014, and it was based on the North Korean government's recognition that they were really opposed to this movie, The Interview, which was a what I call a ribald comedy. It wasn't that good of a movie, but it was an important thing in exposing the kind of problems that North Korea poses. North Korea, it needs to be understood, and I don't think a lot of people understand this, that this is really a crimes against humanity regime. UN human rights commissions have exposed that. They've identified it, and yet here we are in the 21st century, and we're still dealing with this regime that does horrible, unspeakable things to its own people. excuse me. The Sony hack was really the first time that a government had attacked a private industry thing for political gain. Mm-hmm. And so the Sony Pictures, they went in, they took information, which was extremely damaging to the company, as well as they conducted a damaging attack. In other words, the software that was used actually destroyed the entire networks of these people. It's kind of a harbinger of things to come. For research for the book, I actually interviewed a North Korean defector whose name is Kim Hung Kwang, and he actually trained hackers in North Korea, and he issued a dire warning. He said the U.S. and the West should definitely take this threat serious. What they're going for ultimately is U.S. infrastructure, the ability to turn out the lights, to damage our infrastructure, and prevent us from operating as a Western Western society. And of course, everyone recognizes that the U.S. is probably the most wired country in the world. Everything is networked. And so if you attack that infrastructure, you could cause strategic damage to the United States. And that's the real danger. Now, the North Koreans are building on that capability. They're still considered a second-tier threat to the Russians and the Chinese.
So my question again, why aren't we doing something to harden this stuff? Something we've just discovered. This is something that has been known for years, that this was a real threat. Go ahead, Vicky.
Well, let's just talk about this Sony hack for a minute.
Okay.
I looked it up, and it is a grade B movie script. If you think of a movie production facility, especially in this day and age, it's all done on computer systems, right?
Right.
Okay. They're asking us to believe that their IT department was just right on the main floor where you could just walk right into it. Nobody was there, and everybody was logged into their computers, so a stranger could just walk in, sit down. After the alleged hack, they had no backups whatsoever. They had to issue manual checks. I mean, as a professional in the business, as I read this, this is a movie script. Mm-hmm. There's no professional IT organization in the world that would operate like this. You know, and I don't care about how, new young people, do things. This would not happen. Okay, yeah. So the interview, the movie that they're saying that the North Koreans released, I would say the interview is the interview that Bill Gertz did with this alleged IT hacker trainer from North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole thing is just it's like a lie within a lie within a lie.
Yeah, kind of like the layers of an onion.
Yeah, it's a big joke as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's not a very funny joke.
No, it's not funny, but they're using it. They're using it to show how dangerous North Korea is.
Yeah,
but it's absurd.
Well, you got to villainize them. You got to villainize them. And I'm no fan of the North Korean regime, folks. I want to make that clear. But you got to look at all this stuff objectively from all sides. Tell you what, we're at the top of the hour already. Hour number two of Govern America straight ahead. Please, don't go away.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is our number two of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. It continues to be the 22nd of April, 2017, just a couple of days away from this big drill in New York City and other towns on the east part of the United States, where they're going to simulate a nuclear detonation, and for what purpose? Why do we need this, ladies and gentlemen? This is what we're talking about here at the moment. And we were playing audio from Bill Gertz, who was on C-SPAN, I believe, this past week. Wasn't that correct, Vicki?
I missed what you said. I came in a little bit late.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, Bill Gertz, he was on. When was that interview done? Was that like a couple of days ago?
Yeah, it was just recent. A few days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was being interviewed by Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, She's a Republican from New York, and I recognize this woman as being the woman. We played audio from her before when she was drilling Comey. She's the one that was up there asking Comey some of the right questions, although she didn't go far enough. But in this interview, it's kind of interesting how she referred to a non-governmental agency. She referred to Sony as a non-governmental agency, which I thought was interesting.
And I think the Sony hack highlights an important question for policymakers that we're certainly grappling with. Because Sony is a non-government agency, what role should the Department of Defense play, specifically when we're discussing Admiral Rogers, what role should Cyber Command play in combating and making sure that we are sharing information with non-governmental organizations of cyber threats that are out there?
Now, I want to pause it there for a minute, because I didn't think Sony was a government anything.
It's a non-governmental agency.
Who said that they were an agency? She did. Did she just misspeak?
And she's on the intelligence committee. I think she made a big faux pas. She gave away. It was a huge, huge clue. And after 9/11, somebody found a PowerPoint that was produced by the military, and it was called Train Like We Fight. Mm-hmm. And with ubiquitous computing, they have turned the world into a stage. Mm-hmm. Now, who was it? Was it Shakespeare that said all the world's a stage?
I believe so.
Well, and that's what we're living in. It's no longer just real life. It is reality and fiction mixed in together, presented as if it were all real.
Well, what comes to mind when we're referencing her calling Sony a non-government agency, mm-hmm, is public-private partnerships. I wonder how much Sony does for the United States government in terms of propaganda.
Probably a lot. I mean, they could even be the ones that hire a lot of the crisis actors. I mean, when you're in...
Consulting. I mean, mm-hmm, we know the Homeland Security has asked the Hollywood studios for advice on how to put out good propaganda. We're hearing more, the Russians propagandizing the American people. And those alt-right people are propagandizing the American people. The Russians are feeding the alt-right, which is propagandizing people. In the meantime, you've got Homeland Security consultant with Hollywood studios on how to properly propagandize people. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this would be a good time to point out the repeal of Smith-Mundt. The Smith-Mundt Act was repealed in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2013, the NDAA 2013, which the Smith-Mundt Act, if you recall, made it illegal for the Broadcasting Board of Governors to propagandize the American people. And that was repealed. They were not supposed to turn propaganda inward. And yet, now since that repeal, and that may very well be one of the reasons why, if not the reason why, Michael Hastings was murdered, is because he reported on that. Now, there are probably other things he was into as well. He was working on some pretty hot stuff. But this, you know, and his car just decided to drive backward at a high rate of speed through an intersection and crash into a tree and explode. So, anyway, I digress. Getting back to the audio here.
That's really the big problem right now, is that what they call the lines of authority that allow the government to be able to do things are very blurred. They're very muddled.
Now, we were just talking about propaganda. This is really a good transition, too, because listen to what he calls for in his answers.
And not clear. And the problem is that most of the infrastructure is in private hands. Private companies also are in charge of their own security. The government has a great resource of security abilities, and they're kind of constrained from using it. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some are political. We saw some of the Snowden disclosures kind of really turned against the National Security Agency, which to me is the premier agency for cybersecurity. Other intelligence and law enforcement agencies in the Pentagon have good capabilities to counter this, but they're constrained by law and by regulation about what they can do. That's why I think we really need kind of a new entity. I call it Information America, where we would set up something that would be similar to the U.S. Information Agency of the Cold War era, and that would transcend various agencies, because if it's part of the Defense Department, information warfare would be subordinated to kinetic military. It would be a support function. If it's in the intelligence community, it would be imposed by heavy secrecy, which is their culture. And if it's in the State Department, it would be what I call diplomacy impaired. In other words, the State Department is oriented towards getting along with foreign nations. So if we had an individual agency that could do this kind of thing, I think it would help clarify those lines of authority. And it could be, again, both a content counter and promotion thing, as well as technical and cyber, to be able to cross over these two things and perhaps interact better with the private sector.
Hello, George Orwell. Here's your Ministry of Truth.
Yeah, and we're here to protect you.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity. Government protection for cybersecurity. I really do believe that American corporations can take care of themselves in terms of cybersecurity. What he's really talking about is nationalization of all the companies, because I've always said that the IT department is the beating heart of any large corporation. It doesn't matter what that corporation does, whether they manufacture things, whether they're selling, you know, tourist things, doesn't matter. Their IT department is the beating heart of that corporation. Mm-hmm. And if you have the government going in and taking over cybersecurity, then basically you have nationalized that company.
Yep. And basically, this is what the public-private partnership model really is. It's a fascist system where the government is involved in corporations. You know, we villainized communism for a good reason. But and years ago, we were told that the communist model is dead. They didn't put model, they didn't put it quite like that, but they said communism is dead. Well, that's because they killed it. Communism is dead because they killed it. They decided that's not the way they want to implement the control. So they're going right about it with the corporatist fascist way, where they're going to do these public-private partnerships and take control. And
yeah,
everybody thinks
exactly
it's all based on markets.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. They killed 20th century communism, but now they are implementing 21st century collectivism, which is really the same thing.
Yeah, essentially it's the same thing as far as control is concerned, because what difference does it make if you're controlled by corporations in partnership with the government, or you're controlled by an authoritarian state? The end result is the same. You're under a thumb of somebody, being, you know, the heavy chains have bound you.
Right. For the average person, it doesn't make any difference whether it's fascism or communism, because in both systems, the average person becomes a slave.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Which form it is, which form of monstrous governing management of the economy and country it is.
Yep. We got a call on the line, so I'll tell you what, I got a couple more sound bites. Well, I think one more, I don't know, two more from Bill Gertz. I'll get to that in a moment. But and folks, you're welcome to call in if you want. The phone number is 1-844-646-8376. I haven't really given the number out. 844-6-GOVERN, toll free, 1-844-646-8376. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Morning, Darren. Morning, Vicki. This is Lark.
Hi, Lark. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good. Thank you. Good morning to you. Just a quick observation. You know, William H. White, Jr., W-H-Y-T-E, instead of W-H-I-T-E, wrote a book about 1956 called The Organization Man, which was a bestseller at the time. The year prior, Sloan Wilson wrote The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, 55-56. And what he described is a situation where Americans were more inclined to want to join in common cause with collectivist entities, whether it be a trade union, a trade association, or a corporation. And what was, because they felt like that the decisions that could be made by the group would be better than the decisions made by the individual,
mm-hmm,
in an entrepreneurial, independent endeavor.
Democratic.
And so, well, so what happened is that there's also another, there's a short documentary about 25 or 30 minutes that's called The Organization Men.
Mm-hmm.
And it was largely narrated, or featured, I should say, a vice president of FDR's during one of his terms. And the bottom line is this. Capitalism really today is a form of corporatism, and which is a form of socialism. In such a scenario, you can easily create a caste system. You know, the capitalists have a caste system just like the communist. You know, the communist caste system was the intelligentsia, the nomenclatura, the bourgeoisie, and the proletariat.
Mm-hmm.
But the capitalist system is the shareholders. Then there's the board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
Then management. Then labor. And you know, Das Kapital spoke of that. But what I'm suggesting here is that it's really easy to inflict so-called terrorist attacks upon the American people in large numbers because of the technological advancements made today. And when you consider that everyone under martial rule, since at least the time of the American Civil War, 1863, everyone is compartmentalized and on a need-to-know basis, just like it is in the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to suggest is this. So long as Americans really do not care about independence, personal autonomy, exercise of free will, and they willy-nilly are told that the best way that they can make a life for themselves is to conform to the will of a collectivist entity, trade union, corporation. People want to keep their pensions.
Mm-hmm.
They have separate retirement accounts, KEO plans, IRA plans, and so forth and so on, then we're going to have an increasingly mechanized society that is controlled in a pyramidal societal structure, because the decisions are made at the top, and then they're handed down.
Well, you couple with that, Lark, the fact that people are being conditioned at an early age now to do groupthink. I mean, these schools now are encouraging these students to work on projects together so that nobody can be an individual. your grade is dependent upon what the group does. Everything is being done in groups now.
No doubt.
It's just like, you know, the Delphi technique, but it's applied to the public schools now. You've got a facilitator in the classroom, and that's really what teachers have become, are facilitators. They're not really even there to teach anymore. They're there to facilitate the program.
I think they actually started that in the night. Oh.
No, go ahead, Vicki. Hold your thought there.
I think they actually started that in IT departments in the 1980s. Because I was asked to participate in a group design session for a function, and being the way that I am, you know, whenever anyone brought up an idea that wouldn't work, because I'd worked at this company for a while, I knew the systems, and I would say that, you know, it got to be so frustrating, because the idea was that all ideas are equal, except that as an IT professional, all ideas are not equal. Some ideas are bad ideas.
Well, some ideas are more equal than others.
And I don't want to waste my time on an idea that won't work. Sorry. Let me out of here. You know, but having said that, that is a characteristic that they know of people who are good at their job. They don't want to work in a group with people who are mediocre, because it just costs you time and energy, and you don't want to be bothered with them. And that is true across the board, whatever your profession is. So this idea where it's always groupthink all the time is forced egalitarianism. And what you'll do is you'll just frustrate and lose your best people, because they won't stay.
Lark?
They won't put up with it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I would like to see that happen more and more, because there are a lot of talented people attached to huge corporations like Microsoft and Google and Amazon and the like. I would like to see that there could be more of these people thinking outside the box. But what I see, too, is that more and more of the means of production is being bought up and controlled by smaller and smaller groups. The perfect example is big media.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the... who has a monopoly on certain industries? You know, you can think of all kinds of needs that man has that have truly been monopolized in the society. As a passing or as a final comment, because I don't want to tidy up your show. You know, Robin Eubanks is a former securities attorney that's been on RBN a few times,
mm-hmm.
and she has a book called Credential to Destroy: How and Why Education Became a Weapon. 5-star reviews on Amazon. And her blog is called InvisibleSurfsCollar.com. And it's a very active blog. A lot of educators in there observing what's occurring across the educational landscape. Increasingly, though, this educational landscape is cradle to grave. It goes beyond preschool through graduate school, or P20. It's cradle to grave.
Yep.
And we have a convergence model, you know, that we have a Soviet, Chinese, Eastern European systems being merged with the systems of the West. IT is facilitating all this. But Robin is a former securities attorney, and her husband is a software developer. I think there's some great synergy that could occur, just to hear a conversation with Robin,
okay,
and Vicki and yourself, Darren.
Okay.
And she's real easy to get a hold of. Simply robin@reformforgrowth.com.
All right, I'll write that down.
Robin at reformforgrowth.com. I mean, it would just be fascinating to hear the three of you in a conversation, because see, when we talk about education, it's more than just the institutions that we think of connected to education.
Mm-hmm.
I hold that it's cradle to grave today.
Yep.
And with that, I'll listen off air and appreciate the time.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the call there, Lark.
Let me just say something here. The National Labor Management System is the cradle to grave system. It is an integrated system that actually begins with the birth of a child prenatal, and all of their school records contain information that's not really related to, well, it is related to their education, but it's their family and all kinds of information, education. But then that information is linked through a system called WorkLink into a resume. And I think I've described the National Labor Management System, where the government has the America's Talent Bank and America's Job Bank. And so it is National Management of the Labor Market.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed that so that they could manage the foreign workers coming into the country so they can control wages. By controlling the number of people that are trained for a particular job. And this is the absolutely the Soviet system. They control the number of people that are training for a job, and they control the inputs to the economy of the imports of a particular labor type, so that they can control the price of labor.
Yeah, it's a completely entirely managed economy, and that's the right word that they would use, is management.
I think at the high level, what's happening to our economy is that they are converting to the communist Chinese style of state capitalism, which is the government owns a percentage of a corporation.
Right.
So they don't have to collect taxes from that corporation because they own 40% of it.
Yeah, and the question inevitably comes, what do we do about it? You know, the problem is that we come back to the same thing that we've been talking about for years, this apathy among the population. I'm afraid that they're not going to care until they find out what they've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, we're going to have police state tactics in place to the point where everybody is going to be locked down so much that there'll be no chance.
They'll tell the people, we'll just cut off your power, we'll cut off your water, you won't be able to get a job anywhere, anytime.
We'll cut off your money.
Control that. Yeah.
Because with the technocratic system, all the money is going to be, it's just like they mentioned, and I refer to it often, but the New Order of the Barbarians, where they talked about it's just going to be digits. You know, the dollar collapse is right around the corner, folks. And we'll talk about Venezuela in a minute here. But what's going on down there is just a precursor of what we have coming here, I'm afraid. And I think it's all being engineered very well. By the way, the phone number, if you'd like to call in and join us, 1-844-646-8376, toll-free 1-844-6-GOVERN, 844-646-8376. We were talking earlier about the Bill Gertz thing. I got a couple more clips from him. Unless you have something else you wanted to say before that, Vicki.
No, let's go back to the Bill Gertz thing.
All right. They were talking about Russia and their nuclear capabilities. The woman, well, let me just go ahead and play this regarding Russia and what their threat is to the United States.
Behind the scenes is also their nuclear development. And in addition to developing new nuclear weapons and modernizing across the range of systems, missiles, bombers, submarines, as well as developing even small nuclear weapons that are actually usable in a conflict. This is, I mentioned in the book that the Pentagon did a study of their, what they call low-yield nuclear weapons. The Russians have changed their tactics. tactics to the point where they have this policy called escalate to de-escalate. They will rapidly use nuclear weapons in a regional conflict because their conventional forces have become so weak and outmoded that they need nuclear weapons. So when you combine that, this kind of a hair trigger on the use of nuclear weapons with the use of information warfare to achieve strategic ends, you have a very dangerous situation. As it relates to the Crimea, that was like a case study in what has been known as hybrid warfare.
Yes.
Basically, they took over this industrial region of Ukraine without firing a shot, and they used special forces troops without insignia, what became known as Little Green Men. But behind the scenes, they were also using these influence operations to put forth false...
Okay, first of all, I want to stop it there. What he's saying about Russia annexing Crimea is not true, ladies and gentlemen, because Crimea took a vote. The people did a vote on whether they wanted to be a part of Russia, and they approved the vote. So this is the same lie over and over again that, well, the Russians, you know, Putin, he annexed Crimea.
Narratives that this part of Ukraine was actually belonged to Russia, that it had a large Russian population. They even organized demonstrations to make it appear like people in Crimea wanted the Russians to invade and take over this.
Okay. Again, they had a vote. They did want to be a part of it. So it wasn't like this was something that was forced on them. But anyway, we got to take the
bottom. You know what? We have.
Yeah, let's take the break, and then we'll get. Just remember what you're going to say there, and we'll continue on the other side, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. GovernAmerica.com and TheTechnocraticTyranny.com, and the phone number is toll free 844-646-8376, 844-6-GOVERN. And we'll be back here in just a few. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's GovernAmerica.com. And I did want to say that we did have a show last week. For those that joined late last week, and you may or maybe joined early, I should say, and you heard a replay, we had a little bit of a difficulty connecting last week. And so the replay, we've got the automation set up where if we're not able to connect in time, we have it automatically where it'll play last week's show, just in case, you know, there's an emergency here or something like what happened last week actually happens. So I just wanted to put that out there, that those that missed the show last week, you can go into the archives. We did have a show. We just got on about 15 minutes late last week. So I would encourage you, especially if you know, the last half hour of the show, I think, was very critical. So I hope that you'll check that out. Anyway, moving along here, we're playing audio from Bill Gertz. We're talking about this thing, this drill that's going on starting Monday, where they're going to be setting off a simulated, and I do stress simulated, 10-kiloton nuclear bomb over New York and New Jersey. And they're having this drill. It involves Washington, D.C., and different places in New York State, and at the same time, we had these power outages yesterday, and we're talking about technology and all the stuff that's going on with this engineering and micromanagement of society that we talk about so much here. I don't know if I cut you off before we went to the break. I think you were going to say something. Did you remember what that was?
Yeah, we were talking about Crimea and Russia.
Yeah, the annexation.
Right, without firing a shot. And the thought occurred to me as I heard that was that it was in an industrial park which is the location of a special economic zone, which is one of the target areas for these self-administrating jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which means an inland port.
Yep. There you go.
Or at a seaport, at any port of entry. Russia is, they are very aware of this system that is being implemented all over the world, which are these self-administrating jurisdictions. You call them free trade zones, foreign trade zones, special economic zones. You could call it a workforce development zone. You could call it an inland port. Doesn't matter. It's the underlying legal structure that created it that is important. And Russia is of course in on this whole system of creating these zones, and I suspect that may be how the Soviet Union was broken up to begin with. So now they are playing the game of the self-administrative jurisdictions. So that's probably how they moved into Crimea. And the people wanted them there because the promise is economic prosperity, economic development will bring money in, there'll be jobs. I mean, you know, the people are just promised the world.
Yep.
And there is a temporary boom while the construction goes on, while they implement the full set of technocratic tyranny tools, you know, which is control of your critical infrastructure, setting up the connection to your universities, to your K-12 schools. It's a boilerplate plan that is being repeated all over the world. And the World Bank is in on it and may actually be the lead organization in doing this. Because I watched a program last week about Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing Cuba into the global system. And everything that they were talking about in terms of doing a cluster study of the economy and how, which is a study of their industry sectors in Cuba, which are primarily tourism and medical.
Yep.
How it could be improved, but what they need is infrastructure development. And one of the people that really captured my attention about this program was that one of the people there was Richard Feinberg. And Richard Feinberg is he's not a very well-known person, but I found him a long time ago when he wrote this book called Summitry of the Americas. And he was involved in the summits of the Americas,
mm-hmm.
That ultimately were stepping stones to creating the North American Union. And I found him in connection with Sandy the Burglar Berger. You remember him, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Feinberg is really an operative and you know, may actually be a representative of the World Bank in a covert kind of way. But they were marketing the same plan. So anybody that wants to know how this prosperity plan, and in Orwell's world, remember this, prosperity is poverty.
Yeah. Ooh.
Okay.
That's a show title.
Yeah. So they're giving Cuba the prosperity marketing plan. So, and that was on C-SPAN last week. So yeah. Go watch that.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, Harvey in Florida.
Hey, Harvey, what's on your mind there, buddy?
Hello, Darren. Hello, Vicki. Yes, last week I couldn't. I tuned in for a while, and it was an old show, so I'm glad you made it. I'll listen to it later. I was looking forward to calling in last week. But this the simulated EMP attack, this is something, boy. This
yeah.
has got to be a
Isn't
harbinger of hell to come. Because when and if somebody does an EMP attack on America, the Achilles heel will certainly show. We have 120 nuclear plants, probably about 60, 70, or all along the East Coast. And I don't know how they're gonna practice for it. There's no way. What will happen is you'll have 120 or so, each nuclear plant will melt down. You'll have 120 Fukushimas. There's no way anybody could survive in the whole country.
Well,
because once they don't have water for
this is a drill days. That I'm hoping doesn't go live, Harvey.
Well, you know, the 9/11, they were doing the drill. That went
yeah.
live.
Well, there you can cite example after example where drills went live. I doubt anything's going to happen.
Boston.
But just the fact that they're doing this right now, I'm seeing this rhetoric everywhere about the power grid. You know, we played audio from Ted Koppel where he's put out a book called Lights Out. And he's going on the major networks and he's preaching preparedness. Ted Koppel, you know, Mr. probably a member of Council on Foreign Relations still. Huge establishment. And he's telling people to prepare. You know,
Right. He wrote that book. It was being promoted about a year and a half ago. But you have Mr. Pry. You have one of the heads of ex-CIA... head of the ex-CIA head, he's also been preaching this, and an EMP, and this is why when you have an Achilles heel, you don't go prodding and poking and warring all over the world. You bring your troops home, and you have to somehow take apart all these nuclear plants. It's the Achilles heel of America. And why now with this EMP practice run? Because we know that North Korea, who we've created tremendous hatred, instead of making friends with North Korea, we created an enemy. And he has satellites that could easily drop out of their little satellite an EMP bomb right in the atmosphere, and that'll be the end of America.
Because well, there's... It's interesting you say that, because there's... The Russians have put out some kind of video, and of course our government is calling it nothing more than propaganda, but they're saying that they were able to disable one of our major ships. I'm trying to remember if it was an aircraft carrier or what kind of ship it was, but I just saw this. Okay, all right, so you've seen the story.
Spy ship. It was a major spy ship. They totally disarmed it in an instant.
Yeah. So, you know, if they can do that, if that's true, and at this stage of the game, I have no reason to doubt it. Then what does that say about a war, going to war with these other countries? We're in a big, big trouble. You know, see, that's the thing. We've heard for years how predominant our, you know, military is, and how prepared for battle it is. And where's the wars that we're wanting? We can't even defeat these jihadists in the Middle East. Of course, we're funding them. That you know, I think if we wanted to defeat them, we would. But I mean, we couldn't even win in Vietnam.
We only pick on the weakest. We pick on the weakest countries we could find. It's so pathetic and so sick and so demented. I mean, I try to express myself when I come on your show, but no words could describe it. It's sick, idiotic, demented. But some people are getting filthy rich on these pretend wars. I mean, it's insane to pick on Iraq and come up with a phony weapons of mass destruction fake. Then you pick on Afghanistan, where a bunch of the Taliban was supposed to be our enemy. Then it was the before that it was the Mujahideen that we supported. I mean, it's such a way, so sick. When we ourselves in this country, we have so much work to do to get rid of these nuclear plants. It's the biggest sore spot on the planet. Yeah, when you realize exactly what happened at Fukushima, they lost the water, and these plants have to have water continuously. So if you have a generator, the fuel for the generator may last a week or two or three if they're not knocked out in an EMP. But after that, when all these plants start melting down when they don't have water, and they're all built in precarious positions along our coasts. They have to have tons of water. So they're along our rivers, they're along our sea coasts, It's the biggest mistake anybody ever made on the planet. Inventing them, using them, building them. It's so sick, and they're worried about it. They talk about some dirty coal. Well, this is nothing like dirty coal, my friend. This is a disaster that's waiting to happen. It's so sick. It's unimaginable. And unless we take the profits from these plant builders and utilize it now and bring all the troops home and try to figure out how to dismantle them and get rid of that nuclear waste, because each plant stores its nuclear waste right at the site from the day it started operation to the current time with no place to go. And that's what should be our concern. Instead of finding new enemies.
Well, the problem is you're dealing with sociopaths.
Maybe in Yemen.
Sociopaths are running everything. And so it's unfortunate, but everything you're saying that needs to be done won't be done because they're not going to be happy until they embroil the entire world into a total world war and create chaos and destruction and completely destroy things for future generations for years to come. And I hate to paint such a dire picture, but that's just, it's very obvious for anybody that's halfway paying attention. These people are insane, they're nuts, and unfortunately Trump is kowtowing to them. It's world domination.
Along with it, 100%. He's stepping in lockstep with the same nonsense, the same generals, the same phony scumbags.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable if he doesn't turn around right now, this day, and come honest with the American people what the hell's really going on here. Because you have children. I have 10 grandchildren. I have 5 daughters. It's unbelievable. Their future is cooked. And they're talking about such nonsense and such a word about Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly should never have been on the air. He's nothing but a front man for the James Company.
I've never liked Bill O'Reilly. I've never liked that guy. Hey, Harvey, thanks for your call. I appreciate it, man. God bless you.
Thank you so much for being there, Darren and Vicky. Thank you so much.
God bless you, sir. And we'll talk later. All right, there he is, Harvey in Florida. Yeah, Bill O'Reilly. You know, there's a clip on YouTube of him when he worked at Inside Edition. If you like Bill O'Reilly, go watch that YouTube clip. Search it out, Bill O'Reilly, Inside Edition, and you'll find how he treats his staff. I mean, he's just going off on people, you know, F this, F that, and he's a little child. He's a little baby. This guy has no business being in any position of influence. I don't care. You know, I don't agree with cultural Marxists being able to take people down. But and I'm sure that they won't stop at Bill O'Reilly. And see, this is the problem, is we're in an information war here, and we're in a cultural war, and it's become a war with fists. And it's become a war that's with blood in the streets. And we've been talking about this for years to come, years ago. All around, we've seen it leading up to this, and it's only going to get worse. You know, we got the media, the propagandists out there telling us how divided we are. The American people are sharply divided. Well, we don't have to be divided. There are a lot of things that we can agree on, believe it or not. I mean, let's just take the needless war subject for a minute. I mean, can't we agree that we shouldn't be killing people around the world? Now, I realize there's the right-wing faction, and I'm not neither right-wing nor left-wing, but I realize that there's a lot of people, oh, we got to support the military. Fine, support the military. But sending them off to expeditions to kill people needlessly, senselessly, how is that supporting the military? When you send them to a theater and you lie to them about the reasons why they're there, how is that supporting the military? But this is this blind patriotism. Rah, 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 America first. I got no problem with America first. I think America, we should be looking out for our own self-interests. But how is it looking out for our own self-interests when we're spread out so thin that we're, and the debt is mounting? The cost of all these theaters mounts. I heard recently that some official said it costs $1 million a year to keep one soldier in these theaters. $1 million a year. How fast is that debt going to rack up? when we're approaching more and more theaters all the time. Saber-rattling with North Korea, saber-rattling with Iran, saber-rattling with Russia. And we don't have the resources. And are we superior militarily? Well, I guess we're going to test that out, aren't we? What if we're not? What if they're not right? What if the other side has a Trump card that they can pull? Pull a switch, hit a button, disable the technology that we're so reliant upon. That's what we're talking about here. And it's the 11th hour, ladies and gentlemen. All of a sudden at the 11th hour, they decide, oh, you know, maybe we should secure the power grid. Maybe we need to start thinking about blackouts. Maybe, even as we go forward with the smart grid and all this technological innovation, which makes everybody more vulnerable, but we're going to connect it all to the internet. We're going to have an internet of things where people can hack into it and take the whole thing down. This is the setup situation that we face.
Yeah, the internet of things so that people can have toys to play with, because that's really what they're talking about, you know, when young people, but connecting up everything that we depend on, you know, our utilities, our hospitals, our banks, our, you know, on the internet, pretty totally vulnerable. And I do think that really was the idea. That was the idea.
Yeah, I think it was too, because the other side isn't this stupid.
Yeah, it doesn't, wouldn't seem so. I don't really hear about Russian companies being hacked or.
Well, I remember when the Edward Snowden revelations came out. We heard about Putin going back to old typewriters.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, there you go.
So, I don't know if that's still true, but when they were concerned about spying, they were going backward in technology. Would we ever consider doing that? Not hardly.
That's the logical thing to do.
Office of Personnel Management to be hacked, and every single intelligence agent that we have be compromised, not to mention all the security contractors and everybody that works for them, all of their social security numbers and contact information and identities. Hey, that can all just disappear into somebody's hand. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say it's a war on the West. It's a war on the developed countries. And the enemy is within.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, getting back to Bill Gertz.
Industrial heartland of Ukraine. And so this was really a wake-up call to the West. As far as the Russian ideology goes, I looked at what is motivating Vladimir Putin to do these things. He's kind of adopted a nationalist, neo-fascist approach. He has called the collapse of the Soviet Union the biggest catastrophe for Russia, and he's bent on kind of reestablishing a Russian supremacist state that he says will stretch from the Pacific to the Atlantic and will control all of the areas around Russia, including the Arctic, by the way, which is a new target. So this is a very dangerous situation as we're seeing the Russians emerge and under a regime that has designs on taking over nations. You know, the apologists, the propaganda outlets for Russia have dismissed this by saying, what's a little country, a little section of a country like Crimea? Well, I think if we learned anything from the last century before this one, it's that if aggression is allowed to proceed unchecked, it leads to very, very bad things. And I think that's where we are now.
Everything he's saying about Russia, you can apply to the United States. Every single thing. You know, the aggression, the imperialism, the super fascist state. Listening to this show, people might think that I despise America. No, I love my country. Ladies and gentlemen, I just don't approve of what this rogue government is doing in my name. We were so much better off before they started meddling in everybody else's affairs. Go ahead, Vicki. I'm sorry.
And I definitely don't approve of what they have planned for the future, because it's going to make our grandchildren and all future generations of children, and actually children all over the world, it's going to make them slaves.
Yes.
This technology is going to enslave the human race. And so that's why I blow the whistle on it as much as I possibly can. It's hard to explain because it's so big and it's so integrated, but that really is the ultimate goal, is the enslavement, the technological enslavement of mankind.
Yep.
And once they do it, it will be forever.
Yeah,
freedom, all freedom will be gone forever.
You know, and this is why we're doing these shows. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, Vicki said it's hard to explain. We explain it every week. We work to get people to understand these systems every week. And this is why I hope that you folks are copying these shows and distributing them, sending people to the website, because otherwise, why are we bothering? I don't know what in the world that is. But anyway, why bother doing this if people are not, we're not reaching people on the ground? And to that end, I do want to say thanks to the people who are carrying the show on their stations, Liberty Radio in Missouri, you know, Steve O'Brien and Allen in Texas. I think Lonnie still has his station in Florida. You know, we've got different stations around the country that are doing the work. You know, Ron has got a micro FM now. So thank you to all the people who are working, doing the work, and to all the networks that carry the show, UCY.TV and American Voice Radio Network. This is how we're going to get the job done, folks. We've got to reach people on the ground. Otherwise, there's just no point in doing this. I'll tell you what, we got to take the top of the hour break. We'll continue. I've got a little more from Bill Gertz, and then we'll move on to other things. Also, the situation in Venezuela is exploding, but it's not as it seems either. You know, and again, talking about U.S. imperialism, and here we go again. Another country targeted. We'll be back.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the third and final hour of Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. And it continues to be the 22nd of April, 2017, as we get right back into it. Got a little bit more from Bill Gertz, so we'll get to that here in a moment. But we got a call on the line, and so let's go ahead and take the call. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Hey, Mark in Texas.
Hi, Mark.
See if I can set up Brother Bill here for you.
Brother Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, Bill Gertz. Gertz. Okay.
Yeah.
I already forgot.
Yeah, Russia's the problem. It's Russia. I tell you, it's all Russia. We got to stop Russia. Oh, by the way, Russia, hello. Would you mind applying pressure to North Korea for our interest? Number
Actually,
two,
that's
would
China.
Would you mind talking to China and get them to get in line with everything here? Hey, Russia, would you carry our astronauts to the space station?
Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
I mean, Russia is out of debt, folks. We're raising the debt ceiling again.
Well,
and again.
We're facing a government shutdown. I hope, you know what? I hope they shut it down and never, ever, ever open it again. I don't care. Yeah, I say bring it on. Shut it down. What good are they doing for us? There's nothing but a
Russia,
big, giant leech. Sorry.
Exactly. Russia is building and occupying a base in the Arctic while we're debating who gets to use which restroom. Are we on a roll here or what?
Yeah, exactly. That's the insanity of it all. You got
we
it, buddy.
Spend our whole time. I thought we figured that out years ago, which restroom to use.
Well, most people figure it out at birth. Generally, at birth is when you figure that sort of thing out. Yeah, you're dealing with mental illness. This is absolute mental illness, cultural Marxist stuff, and
psychopaths. Yeah. The people who have the power that are implementing this system are psychopaths. And there's just no other way to describe it when you understand their long-term goal, where they're going with all this technology and all this talk about building infrastructure. They are building the infrastructure of the technocratic tyranny, and it's being done all over the world, and they are absolute psychopaths.
You know,
it's for the enslavement of mankind.
Absolutely, it is. We were talking. You know, let me play this final clip from Bill Gertz. Mark, you just stay right there, because Elise, this congresswoman who is a freshman, by the way, because earlier we were talking about how she was referring to Sony as an inter. See, how did she put that again?
Non-governmental organization.
Well, she said she called it an agency. But anyway,
yeah.
she asked Bill Gertz what kind of problems could an attack on our power grid pose. Now, I ask again, why are they talking about this stuff? And here we're going to be having this drill on Monday.
That is deeply concerning, the fact that these cyber attacks can happen to critical infrastructure around the world or even in the U.S. What potential threat does that pose for us in the U.S., and what can we do to ensure that we have the defense measures in place to combat that?
It's a huge problem. That is the big enchilada in terms of cyber threats. And the bad news is U.S. intelligence and law enforcement has already detected both Russian and Chinese cyber intruders getting into the networks that map the electrical grid or control the electrical grid. What does that mean? That means that they're doing reconnaissance so that in a future conflict or crisis, even they could shut down the power. In fact, I present kind of a fictional scenario in the China chapter, which shows that as a result of a crisis in the South China Sea where a U.S. Plane sinks a Chinese warship, that rather than conducting a kinetic counterattack, the Chinese dispatch covert commandos to Pennsylvania at a specific node in the grid where they can, and they actually make it look like it was a natural disaster, a tree falling on power lines, and then they use cyber attacks to create a cascading power failure over the three grids of the U.S. electrical grid. That's exactly the kind of thing that people are worried about. And I think some steps are being taken to try and strengthen and harden the grid against those attacks, but it's not going to be easy. For example, transformers, it's been shown that through cyber, you can cause a transformer to explode and blow up. Replacing large transformers is going to be very costly and would take a long time because the U.S. doesn't make transformers. They're made in Germany or South Korea. And so this is the kind of thing that I think we need a more comprehensive approach. And obviously the infrastructure is they talk about critical infrastructures, but of all the critical infrastructures, everything runs on electricity. And I think that should be the top priority, hardening our electrical grid.
Now, I agree with him on hardening the electric grid. But why are we waiting? Why have we? This is not a problem that, again, it's not new. Why all of a sudden, when we're on the precipice of World War III, now we're talking about, maybe we should harden some of this stuff. You know, you don't wait until you're up to your eyeballs in alligators to talk about swamp renovation.
You know what? When he's talking about hardening the grid, what they call hardening the grid is getting it all computerized, hooked up, you know, into this network of third-party transmission grid managers. And the way that they market that whole idea is, including the smart meters, is that they'll know immediately if there's a power outage. Well, you know, as I'm sitting in my house, I can tell you, I know when there's a power outage. I don't need a computer system to tell me that.
Yeah.
And what do I do when my power goes out? I call the utility company.
Right.
On my landline that is not dependent upon the electric grid. It runs over the telephone company has their own system.
Battery backup.
Yeah, and so my landline
is.
Go ahead, Mark.
If a government is attacked by a viral, system destroyer. In other words, just a perfect villain. Who did it? Well, it's whoever we said did it.
Mm-hmm.
So they can basically blame anybody they want. In fact, it could be a lone wolf. It's the perfect villain to have, a cyber attack. They can blame it on anybody. You going to prove them different?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to.
Well, this is the problem I've had with them talking about the Russians hacking the elections. Because how are you going to prove that? You can't prove it
right. Because
they use proxies. You can use it. Anybody can use a proxy with an IP address. You can change your IP address. And a good hacker knows this.
Right. You can set up a virtual private network and reroute the, change the router.
Right.
The directions on the router.
You know, so then we go from hearing, the thing that they start saying then is, well, the patterns that they used were consistent with the patterns that the Russians use. And it gets to be, you're digging a little bit deeper all the time. You know, it's very obvious you have nothing. But it doesn't matter. If you repeat a lie often enough, people go for it.
He was saying also that, we don't make transformers here anymore. Well, that's just one of a long list of stuff
exactly.
We don't make here anymore.
Exactly.
Right. You know what? That is supply chain warfare.
Go ahead, Ms. Vicki. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say that is supply chain warfare, and that's the kind of warfare we used against Nazi Germany in World War II. They didn't, it wasn't just bullets and guns. It was also an analysis of the German economy, and they attacked their supply chain. Because in the manufacture of anything, if you're missing a critical component, you're dead in the water. You can't produce whatever it is.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Mark, you got anything else?
No, that'll do it, guys. Hey, great show. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later. God bless.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. And by the way, I'm not fear-mongering, chat room. These are very important issues. And I don't see how you wouldn't think that this is important to talk about. These people are absolutely nuts. And these issues are documentable. What are we going to do? I see the only solution that I see is to prepare. Because the things that are coming down the pipe are unavoidable. Without the vast majority of the American people really digging into these issues and really learning about it and figuring out what to do about it, a lot of this stuff is going to be completely unavoidable. And I think it's important to talk about it because people aren't going to know about it unless we do talk about it. Venezuela is a good example as to the policy, the results of U.S. interventionism. Now, over at the State Department, there is an agency called the United States Agency for International Development. Now, most people know about that, but I'm wondering how many people actually know that as a division of USAID, which is a division of the U.S. State Department, there is also the Office of Transition Initiatives. Now, the Office of Transition Initiatives, according to their website, the USAID website, supports U.S. foreign policy objectives by helping local partners advance peace and democracy. They say OTI, the Office of Transition Initiatives, provides fast, flexible, short-term assistance targeted at key political transition and stabilization needs. Strategically designed for each unique situation, OTI has laid the foundation for long-term development by promoting reconciliation, jump-starting local economies, supporting emerging independent media, you know, read propaganda, and fostering peace and democracy through innovative programming in countries transitioning from authoritarianism to democracy, from violence to peace, or following a fragile peace. OTI's programs serve as catalysts for positive political change. This is the Office of Transition Initiatives, ladies and gentlemen, and they talk about countries in transition. Now, here we have the mess going on right now in Venezuela, and we have literally hundreds of thousands of people. I don't know, it may be millions of people in Venezuela right now. You can see the pictures being put out by the media. There are people in the highways as far as the eye can see, thousands upon multiple thousands out there protesting Maduro. Now, all of a sudden, this just happened organically. I guess that's what we're supposed to believe. We're supposed to believe the people are tired of being hungry, and they decided to rebel. But as we've seen with other places, the Arab Spring, the Occupy movement here in the United States. These things don't just happen, listeners.
These two people have been shot dead in Venezuela in protests against the government of President Nicolas Maduro. A teenager died in the capital, Caracas. A woman was killed in San Cristobal to the west near the Colombian border. Hundreds of thousands took to the streets to demand new presidential elections and the release of jailed opposition politicians. This from our America's editor, Leonardo Rocha.
The demonstrators arrived in their thousands for what they called the mother of all protests. They called for new elections and the release of opposition politicians. The opposition blames President Nicolas Maduro and his predecessor, the late Hugo Chavez, for the country's serious economic crisis. Many Venezuelans say the country is on the verge of collapse.
I think we'll reach victory with this protest. This is the second independence of Venezuela. This is the day we have been waiting for, longing for.
The confrontation quickly triggered conflict with security forces. In Caracas, police fired tear gas and rubber bullets at demonstrators who were attempted to converge on the office of the state ombudsman. And the violence wasn't restricted to the capital. This was the scene in San Cristobal in the west of the country, where protesters also clashed with riot police. But the president remained defiant. Speaking at a rally of his supporters, he accused the opposition of plotting a coup, and the protesters of attacking the police and looting shops.
We have captured more than 30 hooded people, violent terrorists. We have caught more than 30 today, fully identified.
Venezuela, an oil-rich country, seems to be locked in a political stalemate while its economy collapses and violence flares up again. Leonardo Rocha, BBC News.
So I mentioned the Office of Transition Initiatives a moment ago, and I want to come back to that here. Because the Office of Transition Initiatives, again, a part of the United States Agency for International Development, which is an arm of the State Department. They also have their Bureau for Latin American and the Caribbean. And they say, in Latin America and the Caribbean, U.S. aid helps to make the U.S. and the Western Hemisphere more peaceful. Yeah, it sounds like it, doesn't it? More peaceful, more secure, and more prosperous by strengthening the capacity of governments and private entities to combat crime, improve governance, address climate change, and create an economic environment in which the private sector can flourish and create jobs. How's that working for the people of Venezuela? They say throughout the region, U.S. aid has 13, and there it is, the 13 field offices, 4 regional programs, and Washington based programs focusing on Cuba, Ecuador, and Venezuela. So the United States Agency for International Development has a division right there in Venezuela. Now, you don't think they're working to promote the regime change that they seek? They say our programs in the Latin American and Caribbean help to generate economic prosperity, reduce crime and violence, support civil society. Support civil society. Very important. Defend universal rights and protect the environment. USAID works closely with host governments, national and municipal, other U.S. government agencies, civil society, the private sector. There it is, the private sector. Development banks and international organizations to help achieve enduring results. Now, it's important to understand. They talk about working with the private sector. They talk about working with civil society. What's going on in Venezuela? Some of the stuff that's happened with these shortages. Now, I'm not a fan of communism. Don't get me wrong here. But we have to understand that these things don't just happen. These are not happening organically. And you have the private business sectors creating shortages, work stoppages, and this sort of thing. And it's because there is a manipulation going on behind the scenes. And we've talked about this before on the program. But the Agency for International Development is funding through the National Endowment for Democracy, being one of the organizations, which is essentially an arm of the State Department. I mean, it was set up by Congress. They're funded predominantly by Congress through the State Department. But they are paying people to protest, ladies and gentlemen. There is an organization called Justice First. And this is the organization, according to what one of their own protesters has said, this is the organization. They are paying people to do this. This is why they're out in the streets. So I just think it's worth pointing this out. Again, I'm not a fan of I'm not a fan of North Korea. I'm not a fan of Venezuela. Arguably, the country would probably be better off. I want communism gone. But the question is, and we talk about this all the time, Vicky, the fact that what are they going to replace it with? That's the key.
What communism? I mean, because this is the Office of Transition Initiatives. What they're doing is they're taking down governments and replacing the governments with technocratic management structures. And the systems that they're implementing, as we talked about before, they are collectivist systems. They are the ultimate in communist control systems for the people. So really what it amounts to is that we are taking out sovereign governments after sending in insurgents. You know, USAID hires insurgents. They go into a country And they're the ones that cause all of the dissension, the rioting in the streets. And by the way, our State Department gives grants for technology for the young people so that they can do their flash mobs and whatever.
Yep.
And so they cause chaos. The government cracks down. The leftist journalists are there to take images of it. Suddenly it's a humanitarian crisis, and they depose the leader of the country.
Yep.
I mean, it's a playbook.
It is a playbook.
Over and over again.
You're absolutely right. They use the same model over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they do. From the National Endowment for Democracy, we read, Venezuela's accumulated economic, institutional, and political decay continued throughout 2014 and worsened in the last months, with the severe drop in international oil prices fueling acute shortages of basic goods and services and citizen dissatisfaction. The country faced a turbulent period of widespread demonstrations during the first half of 2014, resulting in 43 deaths, massive violations of human rights, and just, you know, like you were just saying a moment ago, provoked, you know, and they're doing the same thing right now with Assad over in Syria. Same thing, trying to provoke him. Go ahead.
And they're doing the same thing in Yemen. The people over in Yemen were demonstrating because Saudi Arabia bombed their port, apparently, and they're starving too.
Yeah.
So they're using food as a weapon.
Absolutely, they are. And you don't think, listeners, that they're going to do that someday with us, using food as a weapon? I would say it's coming. But anyway, massive violations of human rights, significant cases of political imprisonment, and severe limitations of citizens' civic and political rights. The National Endowment for Democracy supported programs addressing human rights, citizen insecurity, freedom of expression, and independent media, strengthening local democratic governance, political or electoral processes, free markets, among others. They say a particularly salient event which marked the end of the year was the restoration of the bilateral diplomatic relationship. Okay, they move on to Cuba. Another one that you mentioned earlier that they're trying to bring into the globalist fold. What's going on here? These communist countries are being targeted because they have to get with the technocratic program. That's what I think is happening, and I think you would concur with that.
Yeah, moving away from, I don't know. You know, our media has always told us that they're communist countries, but now I have to tell you, I have my doubts as to what they really meant by that. How did they define communism? Because with what I see our country is doing, I consider to be communism. So what were they talking about back then? Are they countries that just wanted their to be able to their own sovereignty, to be able to live according to their own history and culture?
Hmm.
Well, this whole United Nations system with the United States and Great Britain and France, I don't know about France as much as the UK and the United States, is imposing an authoritarian system on the governments around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they might market it to the people as freedom and democracy, but that's only the marketing message. Once this technocratic system gets in, it will be totalitarian control.
Absolutely, it will. You know, you're talking about what we, you know, some of these countries and how we look more like communist than they do. Well, a good example of that would be what we're doing right now with the children. I remember back when I was growing up, if you acted up at school, you might get the paddle. If you acted up at school, you get, at the very least, a tongue lashing, or you get sent to the principal's office. You might get detention. You might get suspended from school in severe cases. But schools kind of knew how to deal with unruly children. Not anymore. Today they get handcuffs.
Please don't touch me.
You can hear the fear and confusion as 10-year-old John Benji Haygood is taken away in handcuffs at school Wednesday.
I don't know what's going on. Excuse me.
His mother, Luann Haygood, recorded the video on her cell phone, hoping to expose that this was how deputies handled her child, who's been diagnosed with autism.
When he was saying, "I don't understand, Mama, I don't understand what's going on," that broke my heart.
Haygood says her special needs son was forced to spend the night behind bars at a juvenile facility in Fort Pierce before she could finally take him home this morning.
His lip was quivering. He was scared. He couldn't barely say his own name.
The Okeechobee County Sheriff's Office served the juvenile version of a warrant for an incident that happened back in November, but deputies say they couldn't serve the paperwork until Wednesday. The 10-year-old is charged with a third-degree felony, battery on a school employee.
A third-degree felony, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe this?
This and they had to arrest him at school.
They arrested him, you know, months after the incident.
But Haygood said her son acted out because he didn't feel safe with that particular employee.
It was because of his autism that spurred this incident, and he was arrested for that.
And Haygood says that needs to change. She admits her son has had several behavioral issues in the past. She says they're related to his autism. But she believes law enforcement and school officials need to be better prepared to deal with children with special needs.
Unfortunately, instead of treating or accommodating, we arrest because we don't know what else to do.
He shouldn't be in the public schools. He should be in a special school. And they passed a law mainstreaming these disabled children so that all the children would be in the same public school system. Mm-hmm. And that was for their IT systems, the IT systems of control. And what that allowed them to do was to then say, well, we need the medical records of these children. We need the police records of these children. We need the psychological records of these children at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this whole little scenario there is, I believe, a staged arrangement, and I think it's absolutely criminal that they would do that to that child.
Yeah.
But it's a political thing that they're. The agenda is political, and it's just despicable, absolutely despicable.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I could go on. I mean, I was going to rant about the sheriff's department participating in something like that. Go arrest and handcuff a 10-year-old for... I better stop.
It's an outrage, but this isn't the only case. You know, we've heard of other cases similarly, and maybe not with autistic children. If they committed a murder, I could see this. But anyway, we'll move on. 'Cause when you're trying to destroy a nation, one of the most effective ways you can accomplish the task is to undermine the basic tenets of what that nation stands for, whether it be its history, its values, its culture, its national symbols. This is what we're seeing happening to us today, ladies and gentlemen. And there's no place where the movement is more active than we see in our Marxist colleges and universities. And so here we have a story which demonstrates just how indoctrinated our young people are becoming.
A controversial vote by a local university. The UC Davis Senate decides not to display the American flag during meetings.
The UC Davis Student Senate will no longer fly the American flag in meetings. The decision was made during a meeting last night.
It's not an outright ban on the American flag, but the decision makes it voluntary to fly the flag in student Senate meetings, and it's sparking outrage on campus.
The American flag, our country's symbol of freedom, but to some at UC Davis, it's a symbol too controversial to fly.
We don't have to have this show and demonstration of patriotism everywhere in our society.
Itamar Waxman is a student and student Senate board member. Born in Israel, Waxman was recently naturalized, but he believes the American flag doesn't need to be in view at all times. So he passed a student Senate law not to display the flag in Senate meetings, stating in his bill, the concept of the United States of America and patriotism is different for every individual. His point? To start a conversation.
About how polarized our society is and how divided we are.
I viewed this bill as anti-American.
Student Senator Michael Goffman voted to keep the flag. His parents immigrated to America from the Soviet Union, where he says they had no rights.
They saw this country as something completely different. They saw this as a country where they're able to do what they want with themselves, with their property, and have a future, have opportunity. And I see a flag as representing all of that. Freedom, liberty, and opportunity.
But Becca Payne is with Waxman and helped him garner enough support to remove the flag.
The flag, to a lot of people, represents capitalism and colonialism and the genocide of indigenous peoples. And this is why...
Here's your little Marxist, by the way.
We, and many people on the Senate feel this way. Like, we don't want the flag in ASUCD meetings.
A fight for the American flag that has students of all backgrounds talking.
This is our country's symbol, and that reminds of us something.
But I'm going to fight, and I'm going to be proud of it.
Now, the school administration is distancing itself from the decision. A spokesman tells me this is strictly a student matter and chose not to comment.
There you go. Tell you what.
I think I'm going to have to take a Valium after this program's over.
Sorry about that. I'll tell you what, we got a call on the line. Let's go ahead and take the call. Hello, Missouri. Come on in.
Hello there.
Hi.
I would like Vicki to clarify her statement that she just made about special kids with different disabilities should be in separate schools. Is that what I understood her to say?
Yes, if they have a disability that requires very special attention, I don't believe they should be in the regular public schools. I think they should be in schools where they have specially trained people who understand those problems and that can help the children.
Tailor their education to their needs, in other words.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I'm visually impaired, and in the old days, they stuck us all in a school for the blind just because we were blind, and I really resent where this is going. Because I went to public school in my senior year, took some classes, did very well, and we do not need to be separated from the rest of society.
Okay. Well, it really did. Hold on a second. It really depends on the nature of the
your disability. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
Your disability was not a behavioral problem. It was a physical.
Hold on, Ron. Let's not be argumentative here.
I can't go through an entire litany of write an entire set of rule books, you know, just having a radio discussion. I depend on the common sense of people who are listening.
You know, let me ask you a question.
We're talking about autism.
Well, Ron, what would you... Hold on, let me ask you a question. What would your solution be than to, say, a problem with autism?
I have no idea about autism. I just meant what Vicki said.
Okay, but this is the point. If you're going to tear down what she said, shouldn't you have an idea of what to do about it?
I'm dealing with visually impairments. Vicki said, when you played the story, Vicki said that people with disabilities should be in a separate school. That's where I'm going, and I just don't think that's true at all. We've done this in a society where...
Well, we were talking about autism. We were talking about autism.
I'm just going by the statement that was made.
Okay.
And the question is, I do have a friend of mine. His child is autistic. He went to public school, did very fine. They did not call the cops. They had some common sense where they dealt with him and the, the gal from the social service that, you know, got, you know, whatever help he needed. But the point is they didn't call the cops. And I would agree that we don't need to call the cops on every little thing in America. But in the old days, people who were had different disabilities, including blindness, were stuck away in institutions for the rest of their lives, and they were basically excluded from society. And I really don't want to see us go back to this separate deal and so forth.
Okay, but look, here's the thing, Ron. Hold on a second. Here's the thing. Even people who are blind they need special accommodations. Wouldn't you agree with that? Maybe not. Maybe not the school for the. Maybe not the school for the blind, but they can't learn exactly the same way everybody else can because they can't see. You got to teach them how to read in a different way. The regular average school, your mainstream schools, aren't going to teach Braille, for instance. Now I'm hearing from. I guess they're not teaching Braille now, from what I'm hearing.
Well, they're not teaching. Which I'm really against that. And Darren, since you brought that up, Vicki, I know you would agree with this. Not teaching anybody how to read or write, and I don't care if it's Braille, French, Spanish, English, whatever it is, that listening to a book on an audio device, tape, computer, whatever, is not literacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't sink in as well.
Well, so, not even that. I mean, you can't even read. If you don't know Braille or whatever language, you know, since you're all sighted, if no one taught you to how to read, you would not be literate. And it's
that's
the same
true.
With a blind person or a deaf person, you know, learning sign language, whatever. And the reason why they're not teaching Braille is the alleged reason is that it costs too much to print Braille.
Yeah, well.
But I'm like, well, then could it cost too much to cost print?
It costs too much to print books, too, I suppose. It costs too much to pay teachers to actually teach. So we're just going to have facilitators in the classroom and let the electronic devices do it instead. That's where we are right now.
You know, and since we're going this way, I think we're going on a very dangerous path when I don't know, since you're all, I know you're involved in university, Vicki, I'm not sure if you are or not. Where all the stuff is on these iPads and Kindles, and when you're done, you don't get to keep it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am really opposed to computers in the classroom until high school, just for what it's worth, because...
Well, that's why.
Because of the very things that you're talking about. Children should learn how to read. We are depriving them of the experience of living different lives through other people's through descriptions, you know, of different places and times. The classic literature, learning the language, you know, the construction of our language. We're depriving our children of all of that. We're not educating children anymore. They are being trained. Just like dogs. Just like dogs.
Yep.
You know, it's Pavlov's.
Down here, Vicki, we have a friend of ours has students at school. They have to wear uniforms. They have to say the Pledge of Allegiance. They have to say a pledge to the school before they even start the day. And a friend of ours works at Walmart, and they have to say a pledge to Sam Walton, who's not even here, before they go to work every morning.
Oh, good grief.
Wow.
I go Google it, if you are, whatever, search engine. Kmart and Walmart has this pledge, and I'm not making this up, but it's actually on their website. It's called the Pledge to Sam Walton.
Oh, my word.
Wow. That one I haven't heard. Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, and Kmart has one to S.S. Kresge, and Walmart has one to Sam's. I asked a young lady at Target, I said, do you have a pledge? She goes, no, we're humans over here. So, anyway, I'll let you go on to the next caller, but but I do appreciate the clarification. And the behavioral thing, you probably do have a good point, but a lot of the, you know, we people that are blind and even deaf, I mean, you know, I still think it's good to integrate, and how you deal with some of the behavior questions, I don't know, because I'm totally out of the field of that one.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Thanks for the call, Ron.
It really...
By the way, what...
Oops, I'm sorry. He started saying something else after I hit the button.
Whoops. Well, anyway, it really depends on what the nature of the disability is. When it's a behavioral kind of thing, which autism is... It's doing a disservice not only to the child himself, but to his classmates. So,
yeah. Well, I'm all in favor of integration whenever you can integrate, but there are some cases you just can't integrate, and that's the problem. And I think that's the point you were making is you've got to tailor the education to the child whenever you can. And there are some children that are problem children that they're not going to learn no matter what you do. And in that case, you know, there's no substitution for the role of the parent. And this is exactly my problem. And I was thinking about it during that piece that we were playing. Some of this is, you know, I don't know what to what degree it's the autism and what degree it is parenting. And, you know, I don't have an autistic child, thankfully. So I can't speak to how difficult it is. But I'm sure it's very difficult. But yeah. I do know that the art of parenting is something that has been lost today. People don't know. Everyone's trying to be a friend of their child first before being a parent. And there's this lack of discipline, or when there is discipline, it's hard discipline and no love mixed in. You got to have both elements. Otherwise, you're going to have a child that's going to be rebellious and out of control. And you may end up having that anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, with that situation that was described there, I would consider putting, you know, that mother put her child in a situation where he could be psychologically scarred forever. Mm-hmm. Reckless endangerment is what I call it, both on the part of the school and the parents. And not to mention the criminal, what I consider criminal behavior of the law enforcement, the way they arrested that child and terrorized him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if you know that your child is a potential behavioral problem like that, you need to protect him. Yeah. And I don't think she protected him by throwing him into the mix of the public schools.
Yeah, so, there is a case, and that's the best thing, is homeschooling. Because it's hard, I can tell you from experience, you know, yeah. And a lot of people that blindly, you know, it's interesting how some people don't have kids. They don't have children, and they promote homeschooling, and they make it sound so easy. I've done it. I can tell you, it's very, very hard, especially when you're working a job. Now, if you have one spouse that's home all the time, it helps tremendously, because you can literally make learning a lifestyle. And that's really where homeschoolers really thrive the most, is when learning becomes a lifestyle. Every single day, everything you do becomes a lesson. And that's where it can really be a huge benefit. But
yeah.
Not everybody can do that, because especially today, you got people working two jobs. You've got a lot of single parents out there. And so it becomes very hard.
Yeah.
People.
I could never have done it. I would never, because I was not a great disciplinarian. I mean, I was a disciplinarian on some issues, but I was pretty relaxed in others, and I don't think I could have made him sit in a chair and read a book. You know, that's...
Yeah.
But and so, you know, I think homeschooling is really good for some people if they can do it. But I don't think it's good in all cases, because children really do need to be socialized.
Well, there is that. And if you homeschool, you do have to make it a point of getting your child with around other children, if for no other reason than to see for them to see how blessed they have it. This is what regular school children are like, and aren't you glad you're not like them? Anyway, I digress. Let's go to the phones. We have a call from West Virginia. Hello, caller.
Yes, Kent from West Virginia. And following on the previous caller, just one thing. This issue is sort of how to deal with, you know, people that have different physical capabilities. Now,
you're breaking up really bad, Kent.
Is it breaking up?
Yeah, for some reason your connection is really cutting in and out. Are you on a VoIP phone?
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry?
No, yeah, I'm on mid-check.
Yeah, I don't know. You may try to call back, because we can't even hear you. Yeah, try calling back, and
okay.
we'll see if it works a second time around. All right, okay, I guess that call's already... Oh, here's a call. Let's go ahead and take this call. Hello, caller.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a new listener.
Oh, well, welcome aboard.
And I have an issue with the fact that they're saying parents, you know, kids with special needs need to be in special schools. No, wait, my son is disabled, and he's mainstreamed, and he has extra help from school, but I really do not think that children should be separated.
Well, let me ask you a question. What does a school do? Do they tailor the education to the child?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Well,
what kind of disability?
IEP, Individual Education Plan.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of disability does he have?
Well, my son is bipolar, and so it's a mental disability, but there are other children in his class with other disabilities, the same thing. They have IEPs and for their individual education plan, and they can succeed mainstreamed without being subjected to being away from all the regular children.
Okay.
Well, that's odd that he's diagnosed as bipolar. How old is he?
My son is 6.
They diagnosed him as bipolar at 6? There's something wrong with that.
It can
because
be done.
Bipolar doesn't usually hit until a person is a young adult. I'm bipolar myself, actually.
Well,
so,
let me ask
so
you.
Am I.
Let me ask you a question. Do the does your child, do they have him on pharmaceutical drugs?
Yes, they do.
To control it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, see, this is the problem, you know, and I don't know, obviously I don't know your son, and I'm certainly not a mental health professional, but I do know that there's a lot of mining for these types of things today, because the pharmaceutical company, in cooperation with psychiatrists and other mental health people, are doing the best they can to maximize profits, work together to get children on these drugs. And so, I don't know if you're familiar.
According to the pharmaceutical companies, my son should not even be taking these drugs.
Well, there you go.
But you're giving them to him.
They're not designed for his age.
Right.
Well, there's lots of research that it does work.
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, my options are give him the drugs or let him beat on me. I'm going to give him the meds and help him the best I can.
Your 6-year-old beats on you.
Yes, he does.
Huh. Hmm.
There are many forms of bipolar. Kids of age.
Yeah,
I know. I had a cousin who was hyperactive, and I've often thought about the fact, because he was very difficult to control. And they didn't have all this drugging going on back then. But if they did, he would have been on it. And I've often thought about that. Obviously, I can't tell you what to do, and I certainly am not in your situation. But these are not easy issues, and I know that the long-term effects of these mind-altering drugs can have a very damaging effect on the mind and on the body, and I'm assuming you've looked into all that, so you probably are well aware of it.
Mm-hmm. But if he's that out of control, then I'd still have to say I don't think he belongs in a regular public school, because if he beats up on you, what is he doing to the other children? How disruptive is he in the classroom? And I'm sorry if you don't like that, but that's just the way that I think. I don't think it's fair to your son, and I don't think it's fair to the other children, and I don't think it's fair to the teacher. So, and that's just the way I feel about it.
Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, I don't think I caught your name.
It's Misty.
Misty. Did you hear that piece we played earlier about them arresting that child, which kind of led us down this road?
Yes.
See, this is the thing that concerns me, is that at some point, I mean, they could end up, this could have been your child that they slapped the cuffs on and charged him with a felony. So it's just absolutely insane, and we can debate whether or not they should separate certain children or not, but I think regardless, I mean, we're kind of hair splitting with this debate. I think the larger issue is the schools evidently are not equipped properly to deal with a diverse range of students. And What are the solutions?
True.
What are the solutions to that? I mean, this is not a problem that's going to go away anytime soon.
Wait. You know, simple solutions would be better training for our teachers, you know, better, you know, educating our parents, or the parents with children who do need extra help.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think so. I don't agree with you, because I don't think we need to train every single elementary school teacher to deal with special needs children. I think that is unfair to, I think it's unfair to everybody. Absolutely everybody. It's unfair to the teachers who are trying to teach a curriculum to the average child out there. That she has to make special accommodations, and those accommodations take away from what she's trying to do with the other 25 children.
Yeah, I don't think, and it's probably a larger than 25. Class sizes have actually grown. But here's the problem with...
I have an issue with what you just said, because I'm already dealing with a teacher who has told me I need to put my son into a special school for children with his needs. And I'm not the only parent with a disabled child in the class that this lady has told this to.
Well, if the child is disruptive and she can't, the schools have so locked it down. When I went to school, if you misbehaved, they sent you to the principal's office. And if you misbehaved again,
they suspended you. Yeah.
You know, and if you continued to misbehave, some of the kids were even sent to reform school if they got too out of control. But today, the teacher's hands are tied. She can't do a darn thing. And so it steals the teacher's time away from the rest of the children. It does not help the child with the disability. And spending the extra money that it takes to accommodate a severely handicapped child that is a behavior issue in the classroom, it takes money away when you could have a school that is specifically designed with teachers that are trained to help these children.
Well, one other problem I see is there's so many disabilities that, I mean, there's a huge, broad spectrum, and are we going to train our teachers to be able to deal with every single one of them? I mean,
right,
I don't know that that's possible.
Different.
Yeah, they're all different.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they have to, every teacher has to be trained to the nose, but there are teachers that have absolutely no idea how to even adapt to a child in their class with a disability.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that teachers need to be better informed, better trained.
Okay.
I don't think they should have to adapt. That's my point. I don't think the teacher should have to adapt. I think you should send your child to us. I think the school should provide classrooms or a separate school with people specially trained to deal with that disability.
Yeah. Well, listen, we may have to agree to disagree on this, but your opinions and your thoughts are on the record there, Misty. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
And I certainly wish you well, and thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
All right.
All right, so there she is, Misty, and these are not easy issues.
No, they're not. They are difficult issues. But I do think that they need special help, and I don't think it's helpful to just throw them in with the public school. Is hard enough just for your average kid, you know, learning to adapt to all the different situations and people, and you know, it's hard enough. But for a special needs child, I think it's kind of like cruel and inhuman, actually.
Well,
to throw them into that.
Speaking of education, while we're on the subject, you know, we had this situation. We played from UC Davis earlier on the campus of UC Berkeley. You know, we've had more and more problems, and I mentioned the Civil War really has begun, in my opinion. The Trump supporters were holding a rally when they were immediately attacked by left-wing terrorist groups. Now, these are some of the same terrorist groups, Antifa, and By Any Means Necessary. These are people that were responsible, in large part, for the riots that took place with when that conservatives guy, Yiannopoulos, or whatever his name was, Milo, was speaking there, and he ended up having to escape. Well, you've got this situation breaking out this past week, and it didn't just break out. I believe this is all sponsored, and one thing that's evidence, there's evidence of that, is the fact that the police didn't do anything. They were held back, and I wanted to play audio from one student actually approached a police car, and he asked them why they weren't doing anything. He says, I've been watching people get beat up all day. There were three officers in the car. One was in the front seat, and one was in the, actually two were in the back. One guy was standing up outside the door. Anyway, this is how the interaction went.
Hey, how come you guys are hanging back?
Now, when he asked that question, the officer in the front seat just threw up his hands. So you can tell he's frustrated.
That would be a good question for the chief of police.
I mean, I haven't seen the cops around peeling, like, beating the shit out of each other.
It's a public statement, right?
No, I'm just asking you guys. I mean, you're here.
I would defer you to our public information officer.
So they told you to hang back?
As I said, I defer you to our public information officer. What's your next question?
I mean, I'm just wondering why I've been watching all day people get, you know, beat up pretty bad. I haven't seen you guys around much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And?
That's it.
Was that at Berkeley?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's very obvious these officers were ordered to stand down.
I heard Janet Napolitano is the president of that university now.
Yeah, I think she is.
Yeah, okay. Well,
right.
I wonder, now, did it take place at the university or?
Yeah, it was at the university.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not sure that the police are allowed on the university campus.
Well, they got their own cops. Most universities have their own police force. But anyway, we're out of time. But I'll tell you what, it's very obvious to me that these cops are being ordered to stand down. So it's just like Stephanie Rollins Blake in the Baltimore scenario. We gave them space to destroy. And here you have it. It's a revolution, folks. We got to go. We're out of time. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. Tell somebody about the broadcast and prepare. The future is here. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.